The show is Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. And on today's program, we'll have some representatives of the Urbana Pops Orchestra who are giving their Made in the USA program this Saturday at Lincoln Square in Urbana. Concert starts at noon. Lots of American composers featured on that program, including Aaron Copland with his Lincoln Portrait that will be narrated by a Millikan University professor, who we'll hear from, and hear from others in the ensemble as well. Here on Live and Local, I hope you'll stay tuned. We heard American Salute by Morton Gould in a performance by the Boston Pops Orchestra conducted by Arthur Fiedler from many moons ago. Can't believe that recording was made over 40 years ago, or nearly 40 years ago, depending upon which of these dates applies for that particular performance. But Boston Pops was always my grandfather's favorite orchestra and Arthur Fiedler his favorite conductor. And I wonder what he would say these days. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9, and Gould's American Salute is one of many pieces that will be on the program this Saturday by the Urbana Pops Orchestra, happening at 12 noon at Lincoln Square in Urbana. And we have with us a number of characters who figure into this production. Stephen Larson is the associate conductor of the orchestra, and Tamara Gingold is the concertmaster of the orchestra. Also, one of her students from Urbana High School, just graduated from Urbana High School, I believe, who was also a member of the orchestra and kind of represents the fairly considerable student body that's in there. One of the things that they've always made a point of is the teacher-student relationship, sort of mentoring within the Urbana Pops in all the sections. So Glenn Davis is here. And also with us is the narrator for Aaron Copland's Lincoln Portrait, which will be in the program. He's a Millikan University professor and ethnomusicologist, Travis Steimling. So thank you all very much for coming in. You can say a collective thank you for having me, right?
Thank you.
There we go. They're not responding very clearly here. They're sharing a couple of microphones, so we'll get people speaking close to the mic here. Well, first things from you, Stephen Larson. This is the second time you've been on here without the principal conductor, Daniel Sutherland. Is he involved in this concert?
He is involved in this concert. He has a date.
Oh, actually, it would help if I turned your microphones on, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there, that's much better.
Oh, great. Yeah, he's conducting a lot of this concert, but he has a job that's during the day that he can't miss for right now.
Oh, shame. Got to get his priorities straight, either work or music. What's it going to be? Right, so what are you going to be leading on the program?
Well, I'm the music director for the Urbana Park District Summer Youth Theater Program, Anything Goes. So we're doing a preview of that on this concert. So I'll be conducting that, and I'm also conducting the Overture to Oklahoma.
Which we happen to have just played on yesterday's program.
Oh, really?
Yesterday's Live and Local. Yeah, because the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan is doing Oklahoma right now. So we had a bit of a feature on that.
Well,
so Anything Goes is Cole Porter. This is in production now or in rehearsals now?
Yeah, we're in rehearsals now. We have the production at the end of July, and this is our very first preview where the kids get to go out in public and perform. So
how many kids are we talking about here?
It's about 80 kids.
Who are going to be at this concert on Saturday?
Oh, yeah. They stand in front of the group and sing, and some of the kids have solos, and then we have a couple of numbers that we do with the whole group.
Have you music directed this, the Urbana production before, Park District production before?
Yes, for the past 8 years.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
They don't ever change that up?
No.
Well, that's all right. They must like you well enough.
I hope so.
Well, they could certainly not ask you back. That's easy to do, not to ask somebody back. Tell us a little bit about Anything Goes. I've never seen the show.
Well, it's classic Cole Porter music. The original production from the 30s isn't a lot like what we're doing now, because they wrote a new script in the 80s. So we're doing the new script with the old songs. And it all takes place on a steamship, and there's a reformed evangelist nightclub singer, who Reno Sweeney, who sings a lot of the big numbers that you might remember. She sings Anything Goes. She sings Blow, Gabriel, Blow. She sings You're the Top. It's a duet. And she sings I Get a Kick Out of You. So a lot of the well-known Cole Porter tunes are in there. And there's some duets that we'll have, and the whole group sings Anything Goes. So it's very fun.
Yeah, well, those are definitely four songs that I know, and I had no idea they came out of that show.
Oh, yeah.
We were talking about this on the show yesterday regarding Oklahoma. Was Anything Goes one of those musicals where the action goes on and then people stop and sing a song, as opposed to the action goes on leading to a song which sort of carries along the action or takes on the emotions?
Well, Anything Goes was written before Oklahoma. Oklahoma was one of the first musicals to do that, and it was written in the early 40s. And since Anything Goes was in the 30s, they really weren't doing that yet. So that's why we have a newer script for it, because the new script does that.
Really?
They have the action goes into the singing. I haven't read the old script, but I believe it's probably like what you described, where there's action and then singing that really doesn't have anything to do with the action.
Let's act for a while. Oh, let's have a song. It's time. The audience looks bored, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. It's all kind of nautically themed, but the newer script is lots of fun. There's fun sight gags and jokes and lots of fun stuff.
Well, that having 80 kids, and this is high school age and younger?
10 to 18.
10 to 18. So what's the age range of some of the students who are involved in the Urbana Pops Orchestra?
Tamara?
Do you know?
Okay, Tamara's up.
Tamara Gingold is concertmaster. She will know. She also happens to be the orchestra director at Urbana High School.
Thanks for having us on here. There are about 10 to 15 students, and they mostly range in high school ages. Although I think last year we had somebody who was a seventh grader who was an amazing violinist. This year we did something different, and we required everybody to audition. I had to audition. Everybody in the orchestra was required to audition to keep our level playing up. So the students who are in there auditioned. They well deserve to be in the orchestra, and we're having a great time working with them. And Glenn, as a student from last year, maybe you could tell us the difference of being a student and the mentoring with the teacher-student relationship last year, and now you are one of the people who is mentoring a high school student.
Yeah. last year, as a student, being a student, there's always, every single year, you find drastic improvement. And so when you're a student, even if you are a junior or a senior, you notice the difference between being a student in the Pops Orchestra and then not being a student anymore, being one of the leaders. And one of the things of being a student is the adults in the orchestra are constantly looking at you to practice more and to work with you more. You're always encouraged, kind of forced to come to the student rehearsals. And those are set up for you because as a student, you generally need the more practice time. And then when you aren't a student anymore, suddenly the responsibilities, they increase because you have to find that practice time on your own. You're not being pushed to practice anymore by the adults in the orchestra. That's something that's on you. And that's really what it is.
So you're saying that the students have separate rehearsals before the full orchestra gets together?
Correct.
There are three main rehearsals which have everybody. Everybody is required to be there, including the students. But then we set 4 to 6 extra rehearsals for the students only. And Stephen has led them. Daniel has led them. And then I've led them, and I'm always there for them. And it's so fulfilling to see the students and their progress and helping them, because the students are very respectful and they really do want to learn. And I've learned, and I'll say it every year until I die, I always learn so much from the kids. I feel like they're my teachers.
Is this primarily in the string section, or are there students throughout the wind and brass sections as well?
There are students in wind and brass and strings, and even percussion, so all of the sections.
And when we say students, again, we're talking primarily high school students.
Yes.
Because, Glenn, I assume that you're going to be a student again in the fall somewhere?
Yes, at the University of Illinois.
And what will you be doing at the U of I?
I will be majoring in mathematics.
Oh, you have that kind of a mind, huh?
Yeah, but I want to be in one of the student orchestras if I can help it.
If you can help it. Well, you can always help it. You just talked about it. You know, you can practice and
definitely still be in the pop
meet the
orchestra.
Goal. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you want to be in one of the university orchestras, yeah. there's only two, I think, or maybe there's a string orchestra, I think. Yeah. But you will have to keep practicing, so you will need to be your own mentor there.
Yep.
in order to succeed. You brought along a recording that, Glenn, you're on with some other students who either are in now or have been in the Urbana Pops Orchestra. You want to talk about this a little bit?
Yeah, there's a quartet that I play in. It has Jenny Hill, Andreas Ruiz Garrett, Kathleen Heinricker, and myself, Glenn Davis. And we kind of started a quartet up when we all went to Urbana High School, and Tamara Gingold kind of encouraged us to start a quartet. So we did, and the first thing we ever played was Dvorak's American Quartet. And that's kind of why we got together, is because we all loved that piece so much, and we had the skill. We thought, why not play that? And so we did, and we learned all the movements, and the fourth movement is the one that you'll be playing. But anyways, we all enjoy playing music so much that we do the extracurricular things like forming a quartet that plays outside of school. We do a lot of different events. And we all play in other orchestras. I know a lot of us, we've all been in, or three of us have been in the youth orchestra at one time, and the Pops Orchestra, we've all been at one time. Actually, three of us, Jennifer Hill, Andreas Ruiz Garrett, and myself, are all in the Pops Orchestra, and Katie has some pit orchestras, so there's some conflicts there. But we all like to do as much music playing as we can with professional orchestras, with regular orchestras, and any opportunity we get to play, we do. And so what you'll be hearing is the fourth movement of the Dvorak we played.
The American String Quartet. It's called the American because he wrote it when he was here at the time, so it's an appropriate thing to play in advance of the Made in USA program. Y'all ought to talk to Mr. Larson and Mr. Sutherland here about letting you play it on the concert. That's what I think.
Yeah.
We're talking to members of the Urbana Pops Orchestra in advance of their concert at Lincoln Square at noon this coming Saturday, and you're listening to Live and Local. Thank you. We just heard the fourth movement, the final movement of the string quartet by Antonin Dvorak, nicknamed the American. He wrote it when he was living in Spillville, Iowa, I believe, which was quite a Czech enclave. He was a Czech composer, Czech person, and spent a lot of time there and wrote this quartet while he happened to be here. Also wrote the Ninth Symphony, known as the New World Symphony, when he was here, and some other pieces as well. That performance was given by a quartet of Urbana High School string players, Glenn Davis, Jenny Hill, Andreas Ruiz-Gert. Glenn and Jenny, both violinists, Andreas Ruiz-Gert, the violist, and Katie Heinricher, the cellist. And I'm sorry that we were actually talking behind through so much of this, but what I was able to hear there, I actually forgot, Glenn Davis, that this was done by high school students because it was very, very good. Yeah. Say that again.
We practice that piece a lot. They're really, the Haydn and the Dvorak, the two on that, we practice numerous times. Pretty much every time we got together, we practiced that, and Miss Gingold would give us time in class to practice that, and our fingers definitely got calluses, and I cut my finger on one of the strings practicing.
Glad to know that.
But yeah, we always
well, you know, people can practice and practice a lot and can still not sound very good, but you guys made it sound really good, so congratulations.
We get a lot of compliments on that
one. Well deserved. You're listening to Live and Local, that piece may be on the program, and if it's there, you can thank me for the suggestion, but it's not currently on the program for the Urbana Pops Orchestra. But three of those students are members of the orchestra. They're giving their Made in the USA concert this coming Saturday at noon at Lincoln Square in Urbana. The program includes other pieces such as Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings, Morton Gould's American Salute, which we heard earlier, and we talked about Cole Perter's Anything Goes with folks from 80 students from the Urbana Park District production of that show, which is going up later this month. And also, of course, the obligatory Stars and Stripes Forever and the Star-Spangled Banner. Those will be on the program. Some other movie music as well and some other things, including music by Aaron Copland, which we will address momentarily. I do first want to say thanks to the thousands of friends of WYNL who made contributions during our fiscal year just completed. We just ended the year, June 30th, quite successfully. We actually met our listener support goal, went over it, as a matter of fact. We don't have final numbers yet. We will at some point. but we do know that much. So that means that your financial support has made programs possible for this current fiscal year, which began just a few days ago. This new year will be filled with news, information, lots of music, of course, and performance programs such as you hear on Live and Local, simply because you took an active role in sustaining WYLL. And thanks again very much for your generous support of the station. The beginning of A Lincoln Portrait by American composer Aaron Copland in a performance by the University of Illinois Symphonic Band, conducted here by a guest, Colonel Arnold Gabriel, who was at the time chairman of the Department of Forming Arts at George Mason University and retired from the U.S. Air Force, was for a long time director of one of the Air Force bands. And we'll be hearing a little bit more of that in just a few minutes. But I wanted to introduce the man who's going to narrate this piece, because it is a very important role for narrator, on Saturday's concert by the Urbana Pops Orchestra. He's Travis Steimling, who is an ethnomusicologist and professor at Millikan University in Decatur. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And how did you get involved in this production?
Well, I'll blame Daniel Sutherland for this. A couple of years back, Dan was a student in my music history class and my ethnomusicology class, and he continuously asked questions about Aaron Copland, who is a composer that's fascinated me over the years. And he had approached me, I guess it was 2 years ago now, as to whether I would ever be interested in narrating this piece, should he ever have an orchestra or a band of his own. And I said, well, sure, thinking that those are high hopes. And I should have known better with Dan, that he tends to make his dreams come true. And so now he has an orchestra and has invited me to perform the role of the narrator here. It's quite an honor and a pleasure to be working with a former student on this project.
As an ethnomusicologist, even before I asked that question, what has your primary interest been in the area of ethnomusicology?
I should probably clarify. I'm an ethnomusicologist part of the time. I'm a historical musicologist the rest of the time. I work on commercial country music as my primary area of specialty. And particularly, I've written a book that just came out a couple of months ago on progressive country music in Texas during the 1970s. So Copland was kind of my re-entry into the commercial country music that I grew up with via folk music. I became fascinated with Copland when I was an undergraduate, wrote an undergraduate thesis on his music, and have consistently read up on everything I can find about him. I've spent a lot of time analyzing kind of his folk sources, where he got his musical materials for pieces like this, and of course for Appalachian Spring and Rodeo and other pieces that draw very heavily on folk idioms.
Well, the opening, I wanted to be sure to play the opening of that piece because it is so Copland-esque, I guess, and there's a certain stillness to it. There's a certain, Copland's music is often described as having, at least his popular music, is described as having wide open spaces in it, and you can analyze it and say, well, there's big intervals and so on.
Right.
But that very much happens there, and then there's these big leaps, such as this ba-bam, ba-dam, you know, that sort of thing.
Right, right. Yeah, he did a wonderful job after he discovered this kind of populist idiom that he developed in the 1930s. You see that he does use a lot of those techniques that you're describing. You know, lots of large intervals, large leaps, lots of dotted rhythms give us this sense of kind of vigor on one hand and sometimes stateliness, as we heard here at the beginning of the piece. And also the orchestration. I mean, he was such a light touch as an orchestrator, I think. I mean, it really was very delicate. I hear lots of pastels where there need to be pastels and lots of, you know, really dark blobs of sound where there need to be dark blobs of sound. And I think it's that mixture of, and this kind of awareness of color and of space that makes his music sound so American. When in fact, there's really nothing in the orchestration that should sound American. It plays off of our sense of what American space looks like, especially here in the Midwest.
But there is something about, I was just thinking as you're talking and I'm replaying some of what we just heard from A Lincoln Portrait, you can almost hear cowboy tunes, you know, the sort of cowboy tunes you would hear in the movies.
Sure.
That in Copland's music. I could almost hear Home on the Range popping out of in the middle of A Lincoln Portrait somehow.
Sure.
It doesn't happen, but it could.
Yeah, and of course Copland was very much influenced by cowboy song as well as by Shaker song and other folk idioms. One of his primary sources for the cowboy song material was John Lomax's cowboy song collection that came out of the University of Texas back in the 19-teens. And so he was reading up on cowboy lore and cowboy songs. Of course, Home on the Range is a little bit slightly more problematic than some of those cowboy songs, being that it's, as I recall, a commercial pop song.
Well, to be perfectly honest, that was not the sort of song I was thinking
right.
of, but it was the only name I could come up with.
Sure, sure. Yeah, he was very much influenced by cowboy songs, Shaker songs, fiddle tunes, and most of those he gathered from folk song collections that were collected by folklorists and what we might consider to be early ethnomusicologists.
And how does this all apply to Abraham Lincoln? Aaron Lincoln, right? Aaron Copland's version of Abraham Lincoln.
Well, what's really interesting about Copland's take on Lincoln, this has been written on very extensively by Elizabeth Bergman, a musicologist who's a Copland specialist. Copland's take on Lincoln was very much like his take on folk music. He went through and read collections of speeches. He read Sandburg's biography of Lincoln, and he took excerpts from Lincoln's speeches and parts of the Lincoln biography that he thought kind of spoke to his sense of Americanness in the 1940s. This was written on the cusp of the Second World War, and he wrote kind of a progressive vision of what America should be, as spoken through Lincoln. And so, you know, there are five extensive quotations from Lincoln's speeches here, all taken from different parts of Lincoln's career and Lincoln's life, but that all speak to kind of this broader sense of what it means to be American, kind of our ideal principles.
This is a piece that I remember, actually, I remember playing when I was Glenn's age, probably, but I don't actually remember the occasion of playing it. It may have been actually during the American Bicentennial, which happened when I was Glenn's age, actually a couple of years younger. A few years younger, I guess I would have been 15. That would have been 1976, right? Mm-hmm. I had a certain reaction to the piece that hasn't really changed. This is my own prejudice now, which is that I didn't like it very much, to be honest. And part of the reason was the repetition of some of the music, some of this sort of still music, and the other part of the reason was the way in which he wrote the narration,
sure.
Which I want to ask you to address in a little bit. But the guy who sort of solved that problem for me, at least on one occasion, was the guy we're going to hear in this recording, the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra, quite some years ago when I was in the master's program here, which at the time was conducted by Paul Vermeil, was doing a Lincoln portrait. And I remember saying to Professor Vermeil, I hope, if I leave before the concert is over, it's because I really don't like a Lincoln portrait. But I decided to stay because I was curious what William Warfield would sound like narrating it. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get out of my seat once he got going. And he happens to be the narrator for this performance that U of I Bands did with Colonel Arnold Gabriel. And I thought we'd just lead into this a little bit.
Okay.
And then I want to ask you a little bit about the narration itself.
Sounds great.
You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. And that's some of William Warfield narrating Aaron Copland's Lincoln portrait in the transcription by Walter Beeler for band, and this was played by the University of Illinois Symphonic Band, guest conducted here by Colonel Arnold Gabriel, retired from the U.S. Air Force. On Saturday, the Urbana Pops Orchestra will play the piece under the direction of Daniel Sutherland and featuring Travis Steimling in the role of narrator. And Travis, I have to say that I didn't play that particular recording with any intention of intimidating.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm still intimidated.
Well, I was going to be one of my questions. I mean, have you heard him do this?
Yes. I've never had the privilege of hearing him in person, but I've heard a number of recordings of him. And, of course, part of my preparation involves studying other recordings, James Earl Jones, Tom Hanks, and others. And there's some remarkable voices.
So what?
I feel very inadequate, not only in trying to speak Lincoln's words as best I can, but also in the shadow of those other great voices.
Well, it's kind of funny that the people you just mentioned, maybe with the exception of Tom Hanks, mm-hmm. and a lot of other people who have narrated this thing, is they tend to go for people with deep, rich voices. And
sure.
I assume that, and obviously they've gone that way in asking you. Mm-hmm. But from everything I've read, Lincoln had a very high, thin voice that might probably sound kind of wrong if Lincoln narrated a Lincoln portrait to us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons that Copland gives us a wonderful little note for the speaker at the beginning of the score. Now, the story behind this is that at one of the very early performances, it may have been the premiere, I'm not totally sure on the chronology, there was a character actor there, the fellow who ended up being Grandpa Walton on The Waltons.
Will?
Hayes is the name I'm coming up with, but I don't think that's right. But yeah, that fellow.
I'll think of it.
And apparently, at that point he was very well known for doing presidential impersonations, and so he impersonated Lincoln as best he could. And when the word got back to Copland that that had been kind of an atrocity, he added this note, and he says the speaker is cautioned against undue emphasis in the delivery of Lincoln's words. The words are sufficiently dramatic in themselves. They need no added emotion in order to put them across to an audience. And he puts emotion in quotes there. It's really great. They are meant to be read simply and directly without a trace of exaggerated sentiment. It is the composer's wish that the speaker depend for his effect not on his acting ability, but on his complete sincerity of manner. How Lincoln spoke these words we can never really know, but certainly we can all sense how not to read them. And so I've been taking those words very much to heart in my preparation.
So I wonder what he would say about William Warfield. He might say that's not the way to go about it, because there's no question he puts a lot into that.
Absolutely. There's a lot of acting. And most often you find that that actors get hired for this narration. And, of course, they do bring a lot of their character to it. And fortunately, I don't have that training and that background, so all I can do is try my best to convey what I think these words mean. And I've certainly spent a lot of time meditating on what Lincoln has to say here, filtered through Copeland, in my own practice, and trying to let that message come across as best as possible.
What one of the things I referenced earlier in my own ambivalence about the piece has to do with the way Copeland presented the narration, and that's when he says, "This is what he said. He said. Mm-hmm. He said. He said." You know, where he sort of does this over and over again, almost to a comic degree. In my view,
sure.
Do you find some aspect of that a weakness in Copeland's presentation or not? And if you do, how do you work to overcome it as the narrator?
You know, for the longest time, I laughed at that part of the narration too. That is what he said. That is what Abraham Lincoln said. And why are we repeating this? Why are we being so dramatic? And then I realized in going back through the five quotations from Lincoln here, that there's a lot of really outstanding rhetoric in Lincoln's speeches. For instance, "Fellow citizens, we cannot escape history. We of this Congress and this administration will be remembered in spite of ourselves. No personal significance or insignificance can spare one or another of us." That line there, significance or insignificance, that repetition and that slight change, that's a rhetorical style that's so foreign to us today. And I think that's what Copeland's trying to mirror in that really what seems now to be a quirky introduction to those lines. He's kind of realizing, you know, this is for oral delivery. We're not reading it. We need to have our attention pointed toward these important words, and we might need that repetition just to help us there. And that's the way I've reconciled that. I've really tried not to make a joke of it, but tried to integrate it into the rhetoric of the text.
You haven't been tempted at all to drop out some of that?
No, because it doesn't necessarily work as well with the music if you do that. Because Copeland did, I think he did a very nice job of merging the narration and the text, which is quite a challenge. He wasn't much of an opera composer. He had a lot of trouble writing texted music, although the old American songs are a kind of a counterexample to that. And I find that here, the rhetoric of these words and the rhetoric of the music work very nicely together. I wouldn't want to drop something.
So since you brought it up, how important is it, if it's important at all, for somebody who is narrating a Lincoln portrait to be a musician or to be able to read music?
I think it's very important. In studying the number of recordings that I did in preparation for this, it was amazing to me the number of people who were musically illiterate and thus kind of wrecked some of the effects. The best example I've used over and over is the Tom Hanks example at the Obama celebrations around the inauguration, where at various points he's somewhere around four bars behind and four bars ahead. And so there are some key moments that he just misses altogether because he's clueless about the music. And so I've spent a lot of time actually studying with the full score. I'll be working from a cadence score on Saturday, but I've spent a lot of time dealing with the full orchestration.
And of course, you're not only a musicologist, but you are a musician yourself.
Yes. Yes, I was trained as a low brass player, and currently I do a lot of bluegrass and old-time music and country music as a guitarist and singer.
You know, I was thinking when you were talking earlier about the book you'd written and about progressive country music. That I was picturing you all of a sudden with cowboy boots and a cowboy hat and a banjo.
Yeah.
And the picture seemed to work.
Yeah. Well, I am who I am, and that's all that I am.
You sound like Popeye now.
Indeed. Yeah. Another native of the land of Lincoln, as it were, Popeye.
Well, let's hear just a little bit of the next segment. I kind of backed up a little bit here. Let's see if we can catch the segment where we cut out on with William Warfield and a Lincoln portrait of Aaron Copland and the University of Illinois Band. The reason we're discussing it is that a Lincoln portrait will figure prominently in Saturday's concert by the Urbana Pops Orchestra. It starts at noon at Lincoln Square in Urbana. And Travis Steimling, who is our guest on this portion of Live and Local, will be narrating.
This is what he said. He said, "It is the eternal struggle between two principles, right and wrong, throughout the world. It is the same spirit that says you toil and work and earn bread, and I'll eat it, no matter in what shape it comes.
Continuing in that performance of Aaron Copland's Lincoln Portrait, and certainly William Orfield getting extremely dramatic in that passage we just heard. Do you? I know you said that you've taken Copland's direction to heart, mm-hmm. at least to some degree, to read it more or less.
Right.
But surely Lincoln. Now we don't know what kind. If he was, we know that he had a high voice. We don't know what it sounded like exactly. But surely he attempted to orate,
right,
at some level. So he must have tried to as most or many politicians do, if they're good orators, will be dramatic about it.
Sure.
So how literally should you really be taking Copland's direction?
Well, certainly I'm aware of the particular performance situation that I'm in here. I will have a microphone so that I can be heard over the orchestra. But I take this as a public speaking event. And so, you know, in my own directions, I've written, you know, make sure to enunciate and take pause where pause needs to be taken, because those words need time to carry and to settle on the listener's ears. And there is a certain amount of drama that comes with that. And the passage that I read earlier tripped me up for the longest time. No personal significance or insignificance. You really do have to emphasize that first syllable of insignificance so that the meaning is carried to that audience. So there's a certain amount of kind of, I think, natural drama that comes with the rhetoric here. But I don't want to be so dramatic as to become the star of the show. I really just want to, as best as possible, be a conveyance for these great words, which I think tell us a lot in kind of the time that we're in now about what it means to live in a democracy.
How much did you go back at all and to read any of Lincoln, of the speeches from which Copland took these passages?
I read some longer excerpts. I have to admit I didn't have enough time to go back and immerse myself as I had hoped to. But I've been spending a lot of time trying to get into the broader context of these particular excerpts. I wouldn't say I'm an expert on them by any means, though. And another part of my journey with this piece is actually to go visit some of the Lincoln sites. I'm not a native of the state of Illinois. I grew up in West Virginia, which is a state that was born out of the Civil War. We often say that Lincoln created the state of West Virginia, which is very much the case. And so I've made it a point to go visit a number of the sites here in Illinois, as well as in Kentucky and Indiana, to kind of immerse myself in his biography as best as possible. I've been very fortunate to have opportunity to travel through that neck of the woods, so to make a stop at the birthplace and the boyhood home, and been up to Lincoln, Illinois, to visit the town that he christened. I've been doing a lot of travel to immerse myself.
So, how did that help?
I think my understanding of history is very much rooted in place. I really like to see the places that are. That have some sort of historical importance. I just feel like being there helps me understand. I can't really explain it. Something ineffable to me, but I've come to understand that I need to go see the place that I'm reading about in order to really absorb the significance of that story. This is something I learned when I was working on my book on Austin. You know, I didn't really have money to go do spend a lot of time in Austin, but my dissertation advisor at the time kept pushing me, you need to be in Texas. There's something about being in Texas. So I went, and I realized there is something about being in Texas, and my view of my research changed slightly after having been there. And so going to the Lincoln birthplace in Kentucky and seeing a cabin that's not really the place he was born, but that looks a lot like it, helped me understand a little bit more about the boy who was born in a cabin, the president that was born in a cabin, to see these monuments that were erected in his honor have helped me understand even more how important Lincoln has been since his death to the understanding of what it means to be an American. And it's, like I said, it's something ineffable, but I really do feel kind of a personal connection to those places as a consequence of visiting, and thus a more personal connection to Lincoln.
Do you find yourself, as you're doing the narration, imagining the narration, becoming Lincoln, or trying to imagine yourself as Lincoln at all?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think that would border on a pretense that I can't bring myself to have. For me, as I was kind of hinting at, the bigger story for me is how important Lincoln has been to American history, the ways that people understand what it means to be American. And these words are just another part of that. You know, there are some really powerful ideas in these five excerpts that I think speak to a bigger collective understanding. And so I don't think I would ever want to pretend to be Lincoln. I'm humbled to be speaking these words. In fact, one of the reasons I've been rehearsing this piece like crazy is so that I'm not overcome with the emotion of speaking these words in public, because they are really powerful words and powerful ideas about America that I think there's a reason that we still care about Lincoln, and it's collective. It's not personal. In that sense, I wouldn't want to be Lincoln for that reason.
Well, it's amazing to hear anything that Lincoln wrote, or even to read anything that Lincoln wrote, and try to imagine just about any politician today writing like that. I mean, for one thing, he wrote it.
Right.
Whereas now nearly every politician has, particularly if you're the president, has somebody else write the speech.
Correct.
And then they may go back and work on it and try to put a personal stamp to it. But in that sense, on its own, it's beyond what we would ever expect today.
Yeah.
The man
yeah.
could write. And of course, people back then, probably in general, had a more elegant way of speaking than we often do now.
Sure. And also this was, I think, a more oral world in a lot of ways too. I mean, Lincoln's speeches and Lincoln's words resonated not simply because people read them on a page, but because people heard them and they repeated them, and they integrated them into their own speech. I think there's something much deeper here about kind of orality in American culture, the ways that people understand America. Lincoln is but one expression of this. But he's certainly a darn good one, and it's an honor to be able to speak these words in public.
Well, and Aaron Copland is another one. He's become such an American musical icon. The music that we know best, of course, and the two come together. A Lincoln Portrait by Aaron Copland will be on Saturday's program by the Urbana Pops Orchestra. My guest, Travis Steimling, will be narrating. He is a music professor at Millikan University in Decatur. The concert starts at noon at Lincoln Square in Urbana, and it's free, courtesy of a grant from the Urbana Park District. And
Urbana Arts Council.
Thank you very much. And that's Stephen Larson, who is associate conductor of the orchestra and will be leading some of the music on the program. And Stephen, why don't you just mention a little bit about some of the extracurriculars surrounding this concert? I think has something to do with food.
Oh, yes. Well, you can bring your family to this concert since it's free, and food will be served at the concert that you can buy. And if we sell enough food, we will be able to have the concert venue for free. So we'd really appreciate it if people bring their family early to this concert and
bring them hungry.
Have something to eat, yeah.
Bring them hungry. All right. Well, thanks very much, Stephen and Travis, for joining us on the show. And it sounds like, well, I would like look forward to hearing you put your stamp on the piece, or as you said, not really put your stamp on it, but present the piece in the way you've described.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate you having us here today.
Quite a varied program on Saturday. Go out and see it, the Urbana Pops Orchestra, Saturday at noon, Lincoln Square in Urbana. This is Live and Local. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois, and we have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. Here's a few other events you can go out and see and hear live in our listening area today. Hairspray, the musical, is at the Celebration Company at the Station Theater in Urbana tonight through Saturday at 8 o'clock, technically sold out, but you can go there and still get in to see the show. Oklahoma, as we mentioned earlier, is at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan. Performances today at 2 and 8, and then through Sunday. The Fake McCoys are in Springfield at Celtic Mist Pub. That's this evening at 6 o'clock. The Neighborhood Concert Series in Urbana happens at Crystal Lake Park tonight at 6:30. Not sure who's playing that concert, but that's going on. It's free. Tom Torino is with some colleagues at the Iron Post in Urbana tonight at 7 o'clock. And it's Blithe Spirit at the Summer Studio Theater at the Krannert Center tomorrow at 7:30. That runs through Saturday. And finally, Michael Wallace and the Community Concert Band are at Franklin Park in Bloomington on Thursday at 6 o'clock. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Join us again tomorrow. I'm Kevin Kelly.